Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Manachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Dandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Dandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Dandana. Jamuna Tira Manachari. Jamuna Tira Manachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Go pray Manande Haribo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Dhiraye. Nashta Prayeshu Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. We're continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam. We just finished. You printed it for chapter 12? Which one is it? Oh, those. Okay. I don't have it. I do, but I don't have it. Ragini's in the other car. So we just finished with the chapter, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. And we're beginning, thank you, Hare Krishna, Haribol. We're beginning with the birth of Emperor Parikshit. This is chapter 12. Shaunaka Uvacha Ashvatamu Napashtrena Brahma Shishnora Tejasa Uttaraya Hato Garba Ishena Jivatapunaha. Shaunaka Uvacha. Please repeat. The sage Shaunaka said, Ashvatamna of Ashvatama, the son of Drona, Upashrishtena, by release of Brahma Shirshna, the invincible weapon, Brahmastra, Uru Tejasa, by high temperature, Uttaraya of Uttara, mother of Parikshit, Hataha, being spoiled, Garba, womb, Ishena, by the Supreme Lord, Ajivitaha, brought to life, Punaha, again. Translation, the sage Shaunaka said, the womb of, okay, go ahead. The womb of Uttara, mother of Maharishi Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon, released by Ashvatthama. But Maharishi Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. Purport, the sages assembled in the forest of Naimisaranya inquired from Suta Goswami about the birth of Maharishi Parikshit. But in the course of the narration, other topics like the release of the Brahmastra by the son of Drona, his punishment by Arjuna, Queen Kunti Dev's prayers, the Pandava's visit to the place where Bhishma Dev was lying, his prayers and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwarka were discussed. His arrival at Dwarka and residing with the 16,000 queens, etc., were narrated. The sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they wanted to turn to the original topic, and thus the inquiry was made by Shaunaka Rishi. So the subject of the release of the Brahmastra weapon by Ashvatthama is renewed. Om Jnanati Midandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katah Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sakrachatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindobhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shaunaka Uvacha Ashvatamno Prashishtena Rama Shishnoru Tejasa Uttaraya Hato Garba Ishena Jivita Punaha. The sage Shonaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama, but Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. And Shonaka is speaking on behalf of all the sages at Naimisaranya who are assembled to hear the narration from Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami had been given the task of speaking before the sages at Naimisaranya after his father had been killed by Lord Balaram. Because when Balaram was traveling through the holy places all around India, he had come to the place where they were performing the sacrifice, and Romaharshan Suta was seated on the Vyasasan and was about to speak. He's a highly qualified, learned person, a disciple of Vedavyas. But he didn't know how to offer proper respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to the Brahmanas. And that was his downfall. So even though he had knowledge, it was not fructified in a clear understanding of how to serve the Lord. Because when Lord Balaram came into the assembly of all the sages, although it is an injunction that if one is seated on the Vyasasan, one needn't stand up because one's taken the seat of honor, when Lord Balaram enters the assembly, he better stand up. And Balaram noted the mentality of Romaharshan Suta. He knows everything. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna pavishani chabutani mam tu vena nakashana. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I know everything. I know what the heart of the living entity is. He's bhavagrahi janardana. In the case of Bali Maharaj, who was performing a sacrifice and who couldn't bow down either when Upendra walked into the assembly, the intention within the heart of Bali Maharaj was to bow down. That meant he felt a great compulsion that he should bow down, but he couldn't. It's because socially he was in front of all the demons. That wouldn't have looked right. And also he was performing a yajna, and in the middle of the yajna there wasn't the opportunity to bow down. But in his heart, he was giving himself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he entered the assembly, and he was thinking, I surrender to you, I surrender to you. And Upendra knew it. And therefore, he benedicted Bali Maharaj because of his state of heart. In fact, he benedicted him by taking away everything, although he had asked for only three paces of land. And then by taking away everything, and Bali Maharaj was forced to give his very self, Atma Nivedana. He's an example of this, Atma Nivedana, which means to give one's very self to the Supreme Lord. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Manasa Deho Geho Yokichu Mor, that whatever you have, whatever I have, my body, my home, my children, my wife, my family, even myself, I give to you, Krishna. This is the prayer. And this is how Bali Maharaj felt within his heart. So Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, says, Ye yata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Mama vartmanu vartante manusha parta sarvasha. That everyone is somehow or other following some path that's connected to Krishna. Even the smallest microbes are connected to Krishna through annamoy, or this field. Thank you, Hare Krishna. This connected through eating. And those who are more advanced in knowledge and consciousness have pranamoy, they're conscious of their life. Gyanamoy, they get some knowledge. Vijnanamoy, they can see the difference between the body and the spirit. And anandamoy, come to the highest position of life, which is worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manusha parta sarvasha, everyone's connected to me, Krishna says. And Yeyata mam prapadyante. And as someone becomes receptive and surrenders to me, Krishna says, I reward him accordingly. It's not a question of Krishna's being partial one way or the other, because he's impartial. Samaham sarvabhuteshu nami dveshosti napriya. He said, I don't envy anyone. He's absolute. Why would he envy anyone? He's got no one to challenge him, actually. He's all perfect. Om purnamada purnamidam purnat purnamudachate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vishishate. Everything emanates from him. He can't become, he is not overcome by any of his creations, and nor does he envy anyone in the creation. So he says, Samoham sarvabhuteshu nami dveshosti napriya. I don't envy anyone, and I'm equal to everyone. But if someone surrenders to me, then he becomes a friend. He becomes dear to me. I extend myself to him. So one's advancement in devotional service and one's connection to Krishna is elevated according to one's receptivity and submissiveness. The whole of advancement in devotional service is based on submissiveness and receptivity, how to make oneself more receptive. So Ramaharshan Sutta was not receptive. His heart was closed, and Balaram recognized that. And Krishna's body, and so is Balaram's, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashanti panti kalyanti chiram jaganti. His body is all-powerful, and it's multifunctional. Like, with my hand, I can't see. I can feel, but I can't see. But Krishna can see with his hand, and he can eat with his eyes, and he can walk with his ears. He can, it's interchangeable. He's all powerful. In fact, the Upanishad says, tadejati tannayajati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya tirusarvasya sibayataha. The Supreme Lord walks, but he's not walk. He's far away, but he's very near as well. He's within everything, yet he's outside of everything. What does that mean? In Upanishadic language, it means that his body's not like ours. It's prevents us from speed reading through the verse. We have to stop and think, what does that actually mean? That he's all-pervading, and at the same time, he's localized. He can do everything. So Balaram picked up a kusha straw, and just by touching Ramaharshan Sutta with the straw, he dropped dead. And then the sages lamented that we had given him a benediction that he would have a long life. So now you've nullified our words. And Balaram said, you're Brahmins, you think of something, and then I'll follow what you say. And so they found from Shastra a verse that says that the son is the representative of the father, and therefore we'll choose your son, and he'll take over your spot. And not only that, he's a very advanced individual. And as mentioned by the sages, when they're eulogizing him in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, that they say, Bruyu snigdasya shishyasya, guruvo gurum apyuta, that you've become advanced because you're snigdasya, you're very gentle, and you've received the benedictions of all your gurus. This is the secret for advancement in spiritual life. None other than this. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tatagaro tasyai te katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmanaha. One has implicit faith in both the guru and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then all the imports of Vedic knowledge are revealed to that person. And Suta Goswami was such a person. And the sages transferred. You know what's transferable? When I bought a used car, they transferred the warranty over. I was surprised that they transferred the extended warranty over. No, it was an extra one. It was one, not the one that came with the car. They transferred it over. I had the person that I bought it from signed. I signed and transferred over, and there I had it. And similarly, the sages had some technicality. They signed over the long life clause that was given to Ramaharshan Sutta, and they said, okay, now you take it. So Sutta Goswami was now in that position to speak, and the conversation that's going on is very meaningful because, as mentioned in the second canto, beginning of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shrotavyadini Rajendran, Drinam Shanti Sahasrasha, that there are many topics for conversation in this world. Everyone's talking about something. Everyone's absorbed in some kind of consciousness. And in the material world, it's pervaded by ignorance. And therefore, the chatter that goes on is not beneficial for anyone. It's compared by Srila Prabhupada in the beginning of the Upanishadamrita to be like the croaking of frogs. This tendency just to talk. Even though I don't know something, I go ahead and I talk about it anyway. He had nothing to say, and then he said it. And so this goes on everywhere. Everyone has nothing to say, but they say it anyway. And that creates an environment of confusion, and it disturbs the minds. Narada Muni even told Vyasadeva, after he had compiled all the Puranas and the Vedas, and he was feeling morose, that the cause of your moroseness is because you haven't directly described the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, anything that you say, anything that you desire to describe that's separate from this vision simply disturbs the mind with different results. Just like the boat on the water is disturbed by the wind. It just gets blown all over the place. So the topics of conversation everywhere you go are mostly about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the topics... Hare Krishna. Can I see? What is... Santa Cruz Beach. And there's a... That's great. It's book distribution. So the topics that are going on, that the devotees who are assembled for this yajna, they first sat down and they lit a sacrificial fire. And this was a kind of yajna that was meant for a different age, doing yajnas to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when all these sages sat down in Naimisaranya, they lit the fire, but what did they get? They were disturbed by the smoke. And in the age of Kali Yuga, no one knows how to pronounce the proper mantras to do these kinds of yajnas. So being disturbed and unsuccessful in their yajna, they were very pleased to begin speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and topics related to him, anything that's related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and anything connected to the topic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also of interest to the devotees. So as this verse mentions, they've had conversations about many things which are surrounding their original question, which is about how it was that the Brahmastra was released by Ashwatthama and Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. So Parikshit was within the womb of Uttara, and Ashwatthama had become a wayward. He was the wayward son of Drona. And after the battle of Kukshetra, he had beheaded the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas, and then he had fled. It was an infamous act, a heinous act, and he fled. And after that, to please Draupadi and to avenge the killing of these sons, Arjuna went after him. And when Arjuna comes after you, you better worry. And so he apprehended him, this unworthy son of a Brahmin, unworthy son of Drona. It was a cowardly act that he performed, killing someone when they were sleeping. You can imagine the ire that was evoked in the hearts of the Pandavas, and how devastated Draupadi must have been. And Arjuna vowed that I won't sleep, I won't rest until you're able to take your bath standing on the head of this low-class person. And she agreed to that. You know, she was all for it at the time. But then when Arjuna actually apprehended Ashwatthama and brought him back, then she changed her mind because she was soft-hearted and she felt that he shouldn't be killed because she didn't want his mother. He didn't want his mother to feel the same kind of pain that she had. This is the nature of a Vaishnav. And so Ashwatthama ultimately was spared because He cut off the jewel from his head to compromise. That socially killed him, but it spared his life. In the meantime, yes.
So Asvatthama's father, like Dronacharya, was killed in like when he was, I think, meditating by Draupadi. So does that justify his act in any way? I think he was taking revenge after the war.
What do you think? Does it justify it?
No, of course, but seeing the situation, like,
yeah, it didn't justify that. It was a cowardly thing that he did, and also he threw a Brahmastra, and he didn't know how to retract it at the time either. He knew the mantras, how to throw it, but he didn't know how to retract it. So Uttara had taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, and the Brahmastra had not destroyed Parikshit, because Parikshit was within the womb, and Krishna personally entered within the womb and protected him from the blast of the Brahmastra, from the heat of the Brahmastra. And at that time, Parikshit had seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the womb. And having that darshan, the rest of his life, Parikshit means the examiner, means that he was always eager again to have that vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're coming to the birth of Emperor Parikshit, who is carrying on the line of the Pandavas, and who will be involved with making a deal with Kali, because Kali appeared just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode. And at that time, Parikshit Maharaj finds this Kali beating a cow, abusing a cow who's standing on one leg, symbolic of the age of Kali Yuga, where the cow, who's the symbol of human civilization, who simply eats grass and then gives the most valuable thing, milk, which is used for ghee, for sacrifices, and is the most nourishing substance. And she's a mother, and she's mercilessly abused by Kali. Parikshit Maharaj gave him a deal, because he surrendered, Kali surrendered to Parikshit Maharaj and said, please protect me, I'm part of your kingdom. So he gave him the opportunity to stay at any place where there was hoarding of gold. Because he offered him places where there was animal slaughter, where there was illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, and at that time, he said, well, there's no place for me to go. There were no casinos like there are now. There used to be no casinos in California either. Now they're all over the place, I notice. Right? The only place, it used to be, when I was a kid, the only place you could actually go was Nevada if you wanted to gamble. And now every state practically has a lottery, and they have, it's spread everywhere. But at that time, Parikshit said, you know, you can go to any place where there's gambling, or meat eating, intoxication. And Kali said, well, that's no compensation. There is no place to go. So he said, any place where there's hoarding of gold, then you can go to that place. But he gave him some little shelter. Of course, his influence has spread more and more and more. So the original purpose of this meeting of the sages is they're performing a 1,000-year sacrifice, and they want to know, because Kali Yuga is coming, how are people going to be benefited? How are they going to actually attain the goal of life? How would they find their greatest good? And that's what all these conversations are based on. The interest of the sages is how to do good for the people. This is the nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the India's message of goodwill, Prabhupada said in his first flyer about the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's rarely found in the world. Most books that you find about progressive living and how to build a corporation, like this book, Good to Great and Built to Last by Jim Collins, big runaway bestseller. It was all about how to all the visionary companies that have built up something significant. And in those companies are mentioned the, I was looking at it yesterday, one of the companies mentioned as one of the visionary companies was the company that makes Marlboro cigarettes. Certainly visionary. They had the vision of how to make a lot of money and at the same time kill a lot of people. What kind of vision is that in the end? But the visionary purpose of the sages at Naimisarana was how to do good to the people. And to discuss that, you have to know how to benefit people. Last night I heard Prabhupada speaking to an Indian man about how he said the spiritual culture of India is being lost. And the man said, no, just yesterday there was an article about an eye clinic and how they had helped 5,000 people with eye operations somebody had done. And Prabhupada said, but the Bhagavad Gita, nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita will you find Krishna saying anything about eye clinics. He said, if you want to help somebody's eyes, that's one thing. Then someone will start another clinic for helping fingers, and then someone else for helping toes. And Prabhupada has mentioned different parts of the body. Clinic for the fingers, finger for the toes. But he said, the real point of the Bhagavad Gita is that there's janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, doshana, darshana. How to actually become free altogether from the bodily conception of life. It's this knowledge, how to rise above ignorance. This is what the sages at Naimisarana are discussing. And in that context, there are many topics coming up, including it seems like it when the sages are having a discussion, sometimes someone will say, now I digress. But in their digression, they're talking about Queen Kunti. And they mentioned Queen Kunti's prayers to the Lord and how she had pleaded with him to become his servant, and how she had mentioned that only those who are akinchana gochara or have nothing invested in this world and no motive for staying in this world, only those people can actually can feelingly approach the Lord. And so all their discussions, whatever they are, apparently digressions, they go to the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. And so therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Srimad Bhagavate Pramanam Amalam, that this praman, this evidence, that's this shastra, this Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the spotless Purana, and it's meant for the highest perfection of life just by hearing these topics. Om Tat Sat. And now we have 3 minutes for any questions or reflections.
I had a question.
Yeah.
I was confused. I just want to clarify that you said Rama Harshan Sutta was his name. Isn't Sutta Goswami, Ramaharshan Sutta, and Ramaharshan.
Ramaharshan, yes. Ramaharshan? I'm sorry, pardon me. Yeah, Ramaharshan and Ramaharshan Sutta is Sutta Goswami, yes.
And about gambling casinos. I'd never seen one in California till a couple of weeks ago when we drove up into the boonies of California to go camping. And on the way out to nowhere, there was this gigantic building with this humongous parking lot, and it was packed up full. I couldn't believe it. That people drive out there so far just to go out there and gamble. It was shocking, really. And it's it's such an addiction for people. And I remember when I was growing up, I had a friend whose parents went to Reno, to Nevada, every weekend. They became addicted. And they were just regular factory workers, you know. They didn't have a lot of money, and they just, you know, their kids were going hungry with no clothes, and it was very terrible.
Actually, it's a big trade-off, too, when the community decides to allow a casino to come in, because it's a known fact that crime goes up in the neighborhood, and there's all kinds of bad things connected with it, but it's really hard for them to give up the revenue that comes in from it also, which is the epitome of the material conundrum, that if you try to enjoy on one side, then there are anomalies and suffering on the other side because of it.
Just one other thing about hoarding of gold. I heard there's a new ATM machine coming out that actually gives you gold.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because people are, they're very much worried about the economy and about the... because the whole monetary system is based on nothing, really. Based on paper, and now it's not even paper, it's just some electronic chip somewhere that could be just destroyed and evaporated. And so people are starting to hoard gold.
The Prabhupada mentions that in this canto about how the monetary system is based on a promissory note and not on gold, and how that's a kind of a cheating in the Kali Yuga. Because the bank doesn't really have your money. If you go and ask them, they don't have it. They have a way of floating. They have maybe there's a certain amount of your money they have to actually have.
Reserve requirements.
And the rest of it is theoretical. Uh-oh, I'm going to cause a run on the bank. I don't have your money. It's invested in the equity in his house, which just went down by 50%. Yeah, it's a real juggling act, this whole idea. When I was driving this here this morning, I was looking out the window, and I saw there's a big store called the Lending Store. I don't know what it is exactly, but I think it's a furniture place and all kinds of things that you can use for your house, and you go in and you can get those things. And I was thinking how the whole material world should have that sign on it. It's the Lending Store. You can't keep it. You think it's yours, but it's not. What are the things? Questions or reflection? Hare Krishna. Kurnas, ready to go.
When I first came in, you were talking about... I think you were talking about yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru, and how the process of Krishna consciousness involves pleasing the Vaishnavas, pleasing the spiritual masters. You quoted that verse about how Suta Goswami was snigdhasya, he had satisfied his gurus, therefore he was qualified to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I thought that's such an important point. That it's such a main point of Vaishnavism, that it's not by our own endeavor, by our intellectual prowess, or by our austerities, or by different vows that we take, or by religious performances, or anything, that we can understand Krishna, but all the shastras are saying that by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and by their association. And training and hearing what they say, taking the prashad, their remnants, in that way we can actually enter into the association of Krishna and his associates.
Yeah, I heard, was reading yesterday, Prabhupada said, you can't learn this at home. And it's a pretty standard in any discipline. If you go to a doctor's office and you ask, before we've performed this operation, could you show me a diploma or something? Because I don't see anything in your wall. Is it? Oh, no, I don't have that. I just, I did it out of a book. You'll flee from that place, hopefully. And and it's not what you know. It's who you know and what you are. That is important. And this is stressed so much by... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings to Sanatan Goswami, and the process of devotional service is really who you know and your connections and how you've gotten special mercy. It's an interesting topic. I mean, what is it to actually get mercy from a superior Vaishnav? And, you know, Prabhupada warned us that there are some of these ideas about spiritual master and disciple, and then the spiritual master touches the disciple on the head and there's some electronic charge, and then, you know, he becomes enlightened, and then Guruji is left with nothing. That idea, you know, Prabhupada fortified us against many times. But what is it that's transferred from one person to another? There is an intangible that's there. There are many tangibles also. There are, you know, this idea of by proximity, by our association, it's natural that we pick up the traits and qualities of others. And on a very subtle level, too, we pick up the kinds of ways people speak, and then also their intentions and how they're motivated. We also can become affected by those kinds of things. That kinds of thing is very subtle, actually. And it's beyond just the idea of mechanical learning, something like that. And also, when someone is pleased, by a student, for instance, how is there, you know, special consideration, and what kind of transference of knowledge takes place, and mercy, you know, when that's there. And that is the indication of these verses and the idea, tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya, that the way you approach somebody for knowledge is in humility and with the attitude of service. There's more than meets the eye in the process of transference of knowledge, because the heart actually must be open and receptive. As I said in the beginning of the talk, you weren't here, but I was just saying that the main qualification for advancement in devotional service is submissiveness and receptivity. I just read that the other day. Prabhupada was emphasizing receptivity, because the Lord is equal to all, actually. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. But one who's most receptive is able to imbibe what he's giving. He's always giving. Just like every morning, an hour and a half before sunrise in Brahma Muhurta, there's nectar floating in the air for free. It's just floating in the air. And anybody who wakes up at that time and sits down and, you know, doesn't pull out a computer or something like that will feel that nectar. It's coming through the air. And then if you add the chanting of Hare Krishna and some concentration on your inner self, you'll feel that nectar immediately. It's not as available at noon, for instance. And so being in the right time in the right place and being receptive to what's being passed down and what's coming from Krishna and what's coming from the devotees, that is the topic of Vaishnavism, actually, how one advances in devotional service through association. Karanath Prabhu?
I think it's an interesting and big topic to examine from all angles. And I was thinking about how there's a trend in modernism in history in the last several hundred years, this idea that, like we say in the legal profession or in the philosophy of liberal democratic law, you know, that we have a government of laws, not of men. And the idea being, you know, that it's wrong to say, it's who you know, because that could be misused if that there should be principles. And in philosophy, it's led to a dichotomy between facts and values, you know, that scientific, you know, if the scientific proposition is right, it doesn't matter if the person who makes the proposition is a complete debauchee. It's just a fact, you know, there's these ideas. So that cuts against, but there's something wrong about that we're not just, we have these philosophical propositions that we discuss and evaluate them for their truth or falsity and stuff, but we're much more than that. We have these complete psychological beings that have all our desires and all our personality and all of that stuff. And this division in modern life, that, you know, well, we're just interested in facts, we're just interested in propositions and not the totality of who you are, is something that Srila Prabhupada smashed in a way that, you know, that why, he would say things like that, that, you know, why do you listen to that teacher if he doesn't actually know, you know, absolute knowledge, then how can he be a teacher? How is he qualified to say anything? This sounded strange to us, but there's a very deep current, deep understanding to be mined in that, and that understanding is also, you know, what you're talking about here about Lord Chaitanya. It's who you are. It's who you have to really change your whole character to really get that knowledge. Tadvidhi pranipatena. You have to really, in fact, particularly in spiritual knowledge, at least, it may work for, you know, if you want to study how to be a goldsmith or how to, you know, do some you know, craft or something like that. It may not matter so much about what your character is, but if you actually want to learn how to tadvijnanartham sa gurumai vabhagat, if you want to learn how to make perfection in life, if you want to learn how to not take birth again, if you want to learn how to conquer birth, death, old age, and disease permanently, then you have to become a changed person, a person who is whose whole character is that of an honest devotee, who's free from material desires, free from vices, and you can only get that by becoming a servant of such a person.
Nice point. And in our hierarchy of advancement, that we revere the gopis of Vrindavan, Ramya Kachidupasana Vrajavidu Vargina Valkalpita. The method that was exhibited by the gopis of Vrindavan is considered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the highest exhibition of bhakti and the best method for worshipping Krishna. And in one sense, you'd say that that intellectualism is gone, and the idea of discrimination is gone. It's all coming from the heart, actually. Gyan shun bhakti. There's no more gyan. It's no longer a consideration of Krishna's God and all the different energies and everything. They're simply running towards Krishna. And that sounds, in intellectual circles, learned circles, just... first of all, the whole concept that God's a person is rejected out of hand by people who are speculating about the Supreme Personality of God. That sounds archaic. That sounds so simplistic and so much like a, you know, primitive culture. Of course, they would accept something like that. They're stupid. but actually, when we examine the personalities involved and the evidence that they've put forward and... how they've, then we can understand, you know, the philosophy is very detailed and the foundation behind it is sound. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, actually, their various gopis and sakis, assistants of the gopis in Vraj, who are simple cowherd women. They don't have any education. They make garlands and they milk cows and things like that. But when they come to this world, look at the knowledge that comes out. So it's there in the foundation. It's all there. But what does that lead to? Actually, it's meant to lead to this unmotivated, uninterrupted service, which is driven by the heart, not by the head. Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stita shutigatam dhanuvan manubir. Ye prayaso jita jito pyasi taistrilokyam. Brahma said that one should give up the tendency and the practice of speculating to understand the Supreme Personality of God and should simply hear the topics about Krishna in the association of devotees. In that way, one can actually come to this perfect stage by transformation of the heart. Is it a break? Oh, that's right. It's a break time. Okay, so everyone has a break. So you have 1 minute. On your mark, get set, break. Hare Krishna.